I'm here in Dublin and I'm talking to Tom Hogan. Tom, I suppose your story in relation to Clondalkin. The Clondalkin paper mills would be what exactly?
Exactly.
Now?
I started in 1966. I arrived back from London after 5 years in London, qualified accountant, and joined Bailey Gibson as an accountant. Bailey Gibson. Now, very briefly, the Gibson of Bailey Gibson, my chairman was Sidney Gibson, and his brother was Cecil Gibson, but their father was a founder member of the mill, was right. A founder member of Clondalkin. He was a shareholder, Adam Henry Gibson. Okay?
Okay.
So that's the start. So I joined there as the accountant. It was in pretty dire straits, Bailey Gibson. Very, very, very quickly, over a period of 18 months, the general manager, financial controller, sales manager, purchasing manager all left. And I found myself with one other chap. I became the financial controller and financial director very quickly. That chap that I'm talking about had a nervous breakdown. I became the general manager of Bailey Gibson and managing director. Now, not overnight, but in the space of 4 or 5 years, they were all gone. There was nobody left. It was the only reason probably I got it, but there was nobody else there. So that would have brought us up to about 1969, 1970, 1971. At that stage, I trust you won't quote all the verbs I use. At that stage, Michael Smurfit was rampaging through the printing and packaging industry. And he cast an eye, he had just taken Temple Press, and he cast an eye on the Gibson Guy Group. Now, the Gibson Guy Group was made up of Bailey Gibson, Guy and Company in Cork and Patrick Street and all the rest of it, and Cherry and Smaldridge. So Gibson, Guy and Smaldridge. That was a firm down near the Five Lamps in Dublin. Five Lamps, you know where that is.
I do, Fairbanks. Yes.
Yeah, okay. Now, but because of the connection with Clondalkin and the fact that Bailey Gibson were considerable consumers of paper, Dr. Berth Cusack, who was the general manager of Clondalkin and a director, got very worried about this, that Smurfit was, literally, he was going to have Smurfit as one customer if he didn't do something about it. So Smurfit, Michael Smurfit, made a bid for Gibson, Guy and Smaldridge, which was quoted on the stock market. And the next thing, to his surprise and chagrin, in came Clondalkin and made a counterbid. And there was a battle royal, which you will find in the Irish Times, between Smurfit's and Clondalkin. Now, as it happened, in the Gibson Guy Group, I was the only qualified accountant. That's just the way it was. So it fell to me to keep advising the chairman and the directors as to what was going on. Now, you might say, why didn't they know themselves? Well, the fact is that both offers were a combination of cash and shares.
Yes.
So therefore, the offers kept changing. As the share price changed, the value of the offers changed. And this went on, if you look back in the papers, you'll find it went on for the guts of 18 months or 2 years. We were advised by Anglo-Irish Investment Bank, the name of a fellow called Martin Rafferty, and Smurfit was advised by Bank of Ireland Investment Bank, a fellow called Richie, can't remember. But so it went on and on and on, and it wasn't exactly what you'd call nasty, but it wasn't exactly pleasant either, because Michael Smurfit wasn't the kind of man who liked opposition or people getting in his way. So it became difficult to keep the balance. But eventually I went into my chairman, Sidney Gibson, the son of Adam Henry Gibson, a founder of Clondalkin, and I said to him, Mr. Sidney, everybody's called Mr. in those days, Mr. Sidney, what do you want to do? And he said, Tom, he said, I would like to finish up with Clondalkin because my father was a founder and my brother is on the board. His brother, Cecil Gibson, had taken the father's seat. The father was dead at this stage.
Yes.
And Clondalkin, as you know from your research, was founded by all sorts of people like the McCulloughs and Jack O'Toole and Limerick and Ferguson in Rathmines and all these guys who were big businessmen.
Of the time.
Of the time, yeah. Gentlemen, no conception of what the whirlwind was running through the printing and packaging industry at the time. No idea.
So what years are we talking about?
This was about 1972. You just have to check this now.
Okay.
Around 72, 73, that kind of thing. So I didn't know what to do, and I said to him, Mr. Sidney, you do know that our advisors are actually talking to the Smurfits, and they're all in there. Yes, he says, I do know that. But I said, we've got to find an outsider. So he said, well, we go down to George Overend. George Overend was the senior partner in A&L Good Buddies, related to the Overends that you read about.
Yes.
So we went down to George, and George was a very small man, and we knocked on his door. I rang him up, made an appointment, and we went down, knocked on his door. He said, come in. And we walked in, and he said, well, Sidney, it's high time. Meaning that we should have been talking to him all along, and he was waiting on the call. So we sat down, and he said to me, who are you? So I explained who I was, and I had all my papers and graphs and everything else. So he was terribly impressed with this, and he said, Sidney, what do you want? I said, poor old Sidney was way out of his depth. He said, well, I'd like George to go in with Clondalkin. I can remember him saying, he said, right, leave that to me. I don't know how George Overend did it. I have no idea. He had connections, terrific connections in the city. But within 3 weeks, we were in with Clondalkin.
Did politics come into this a little bit?
I really wouldn't know.
Yes.
But I do know that stuff went on in the background.
Yeah.
That, yeah. I would say there were a group of gentlemen in town that were beginning to get a little bit fed up now with Michael Smurf had taken this, that, the other, and, as I said, rampaging around the city. It's hard to remember, but he was... See, he hadn't gone international at that stage. He was just Irish. And he was full of energy and go and all the rest of it. And as he turned out to be a terrific businessman, there's no question about that. But like there would be people who would think, look, it's about time we put a stop to this.
So was there a certain change in the whole system?
Oh, yeah. I think what he wanted to do was just take the entire packaging industry. He was his money maker, his great money spinner was cardboard boxes, but cardboard boxes made of corrugated. You have to distinguish very clearly between corrugated cases and what I did, which was retail packaging. I did things for Bird's custard and Tato crisps and Irish sugar bags and Kellogg's boxes, do you understand? He did brown corrugated boxes and he had no competition or very little.
Okay.
So it was very hard to make money at what I was at. It was relatively easy to make money at what he was at, okay? So...
Where was the raw material coming from?
Well, the raw material generally came... Finland was the great supplier of pulp and packaging. Now, Clondalkin would have bought an awful lot of pulp from... always, it would be either Finland, Sweden or Norway. But Finland, the Finns were very big.
Yes.
And the Swedes were very big. And Clondalkin would have bought the pulp from them and converted it into paper.
Yes.
Okay, we would have bought the paper, their finished product, or we would have bought their board. I spent an awful lot of time negotiating with the Finns. I liked the Finns, you could talk to them. And England, of course, I bought from England. You know, there were big mills in England. So after that, subsequent to that, I didn't bother Michael Smurfit. He took over Healy Tom, he took everybody, except... Yes. Bailey Gibson, basically, in Dublin. Okay. So I ended up competing with the Smurfits on all sorts of fronts.
Yes.
All sorts of fronts. Paper bags, plastic packaging, cartons. Because Bailey Gibson did a bit of everything. Whereas he'd big plants doing single things, if you know what I mean. So anyway, that was Clondalkin. So I was buying the board, I was buying the paper from Clondalkin and converting, 1,000 or 3,000 tons of paper, which was big for Clondalkin at the time. Very big. And that went on for a while until I realised that they were uncompetitive.
Mm-hmm.
The mill were severely uncompetitive because they'd been set up, I think, in 1938, which you know. And they were given terrific protection. There were massive duties on the importation of paper.
Okay.
So Clondalkin developed and worked behind a screen of protection.